The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. Spurs' first away win in the league since January. Coincidence or the instant genius of the all-new humble Jose Mourinho? Pep says it isn't all about winning after winning against Chelsea. Well, the game of the weekend is at Bramall Lane. Sheffield United are brilliant for 70 minutes. Manchester United are brilliant for 10 minutes. And Phil Jones is brilliant for no minutes. Elsewhere, how many managers will be sacked after we finish recording? Manuel Pellegrini, Marco Silva or Unai Emery? As it's 2 points dropped for Southampton at the Emirates. And as bookies start paying out on Liverpool to win the league, is it even worth playing the matches? We'll round up the Football League, Europe and the Copa Libertadores, where Darth Vader's stormtroopers witness a famous Flamengo comeback. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barney Ronay, nice to see you.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, Max. How are you?
Yeah, tremendous, thanks. Sir Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Your last pod, probably ever.
Well, it could be. I hope not. But yes, I'm off on holidays later this week for a few weeks. I'm looking forward to it.
And a pod debut. A star signing. Jonathan Liu, welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. How are you feeling?
I'm extremely nervous.
Are you?
Yeah.
Shazaz says, how will Liu and Ronay work together? Is this the Guardian's version of Lampard and Gerrard? Does this mean Wilson is Scholes, shunted out to the left? Of course, Barry is Lee Catamol.
It's a lot of old thinking.
Yeah.
It's more like a De Bruyne Silva. But it's a funny... It's funny for me as well. I mean, I've been doing this pod since 2007.
Mm.
And...
You're a whimsical number 10. Liu is a whimsical number 10.
But yeah, but also I've known Jonathan for a long time in a separate environment. So it's almost like I've taken my university friend home to meet my parents, and I'm a bit anxious, and it'll all be fine. It'll be
yeah,
fine.
I'm on my best behaviour.
How long will your best behaviour be, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's already a record. So
let's start at the London Stadium. West Ham 2, Tottenham 3. Barney, you were there. Has a scoreline ever flattered the losing team more?
Yeah, I mean... When it was 3-0, it felt like it was going to be 5-0. But I guess the two late goals were evidence of why Mourinho has got the job in the first place. They were pretty sloppy at the end. Mourinho said his players were tired because it had been such a big week for them. Presumably, the shock and excitement of having him joining the club was almost too much for many of them. But they did look good, I thought, in the first hour or so. And they looked well. I mean, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit there. It's not that hard to improve a team that has a lot of good players and are just slightly underperforming. And he made much of the Dele Alli. I've transformed Dele Alli already. He's back to where... And we'll see how that works out. But it's so funny, isn't it? I mean, suddenly Spurs having a new manager has completely overshadowed the title race and what Liverpool are doing. Do we care about that? It's all about this one Portuguese man having a job again.
But also, Jonathan, it's just amazing how... quickly it becomes complete normality that Jose is the Tottenham manager. I mean, a week ago, I was sort of in total shock and resignation and denial. And now I'm like, oh, yeah, it's fine.
I still find it really weird. I think it's going to be weird for a while because I was abroad when this whole thing happened. So I just kind of missed out on all the sort of the Twitter reaction and all that. And I just tuned in. Oh, my God, that's Jose Mourinho. Whatever can he want? And then I think it's still going to feel a little bit strange. But that's the thing about football. It kind of it begins to feel very normal very quickly.
How would you rate his first game, Baz?
Well, he won it, which is, you know, a good start, the best he could have hoped for. He didn't make any sweeping changes. Brought in Eric Dyer. Eric Dyer didn't play particularly well, I have to say. But he got a tune out of Dele Alli, and the four attacking players played them all in their best positions, and they played well. But there is defensive fragility there, and they had, you know, despite being emphatic winners, they had a late scare. But I think you need to also factor in the count that... I think you also need to factor in the fact that West Ham were diabolically bad.
Did Jose do anything massively different than that, than Baz said? Tactically, was there something that you saw immediately?
Yeah, I mean, he's a revolutionary, isn't he? No, I mean, it was a classic Jose 4-2-3-1, which I think was... he stunned the Premier League when he first appeared, didn't he, by not playing 4-4-2. Was he
the first?
Well, it felt like a big deal that he played with those two wingers and he had one centre forward, and that felt like a big deal. But he had pace. He decided not to play Eriksen, to play Luka Moura, who he likes and tried to sign before, which seemed like a good idea because he's a very good player. And they played on the break very quickly at times, which maybe will be. Everybody looks for it. It's kind of just a really good plot twist, isn't it? I'm like Jonathan Steele trying to. It's like, you know, Rachel and Joey are going out with each other suddenly. It's one of those weird, like, okay, that's the only thing left to do, and you've done that, and is it going to work out? I mean, basically, his season is just he has to finish in the top four somehow, doesn't it? There are 9 points to make up on Chelsea or 10 on Leicester, and then he can be hailed as a genius again who's saved their season. It's quite a simple, linear thing he has to do. And they're sort of good enough to do it, I think.
And the earlier he's appointed, the less time we have to wait for the inevitable meltdown, which is what I think we're all looking forward to.
It always starts like this. I mean, I think at United he won something like 8 out of his first 9, something like that. I mean, banging in goals from all over the shop. You know, and it always starts like this. It always ends the same way. And I mean, for all this kind of all this tactical genius, he's revitalised them. He's made them feel happy again. What he's essentially done is take a group of very, very good footballers and beaten a group of really quite mediocre footballers 3-2. And I'd like to see a little bit more from him.
Well, I do have one question. Everyone always has such strong opinion, and we're going on about him now. But I don't quite understand why everyone's so angry about him now. Like, the one thing we used to know about Jose Mourinho was that he wins your trophies. The one thing we know now is that he's this purely toxic force who's incredibly destructive and will destroy your club and probably be rude to your wife.
His treatment of Eva Conera was pretty egregious. I mean, that's probably the big moral black mark against him. I mean, you can talk about the way he sort of, you know, succeeds or fails with football clubs, but I thought that was a big insight to his character.
Yeah, that wasn't very nice behaviour.
No.
It's probably not the worst thing that's ever happened at Chelsea as well. I mean, that the club itself, he didn't make Chelsea into what they are. I mean, that's a fairly grim scene all around. And he's obviously not like a really lovely, warm, friendly guy, but the idea that he's some sort of vandal and he'll destroy your club, I find a bit overstated. It's kind of buying into the theatre and the kind of soap opera of it, and probably something he probably quite enjoys himself. But I don't see any football clubs that he's destroyed exactly.
I think I'm definitely guilty of everything you've just said. Barry, are you?
Yes, probably, but I don't necessarily agree with Barney's assertion that he's not some sort of vandal. I think he left quite a mess behind him at Manchester United most recently.
Well, hang on. Manchester United is undoubtedly a mess. Who's responsible for that? Well, I mean, where would you put Jose Mourinho in the list of individuals responsible for the poor decisions at Manchester United since about, I don't know, what was it, 2003, when things probably started going a bit odd, where Ferguson kind of kept it going? But, I mean, where would you rank him in terms of the mess that club's in?
Third. Behind the owners and the chief executive.
Really?
But he bought an awful lot of players and wasted an awful lot of money on players who haven't delivered. And, you know, they missed Scott McTominay badly yesterday. You know,
that's not a good example because, I mean, he would raise Scott McTominay as the best thing he did for Man United.
And considering the money he spent,
that's a
fairly damning indictment.
Which players was he specifically responsible for signing, who've been a terrible disaster? Because I know this is an idea that's out there.
Sanchez?
Did he sign Fred and Pereira?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That's the thing. I mean, who exactly is responsible for these decisions?
Can we before we go in depth about Manchester United, can we just talk about that Dele Alli moment, Jonathan, where he was lying on the floor and somehow managed to keep the ball in play and play a beautiful pass into Heung-min Son's path? Because it was just a moment of joy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's. Do you ever play crab football?
Yes, it's at school where you break your thumbs.
And you're all sort of, I mean, if you've never played crab football?
No.
Right, so basically, yeah, I mean, everybody's on the
never
ground.
Never even heard of it.
Everybody's on the backside, and you basically, you play football with on your backside with your legs. You kick it around, and that's how you play crab football.
Mm.
And that's essentially what he did. He was on the ground, and the ball was, I think, just about to go out for a throw, and he sort of scraped it with classic crab football reflexes up the touchline for Son.
There was one incredible bit in that where he actually lifted his own body to hook it underneath himself into the path of a run that he could sort of see out the back of his head. I mean, it was, we were just on the touchline, you know, where the press box, you see it very clearly, and there was a kind of gasp as he did it, which was kind of nice.
More because it was unusual, though. I mean, I like to think that's what we'd all have tried to do in that situation. It's just that he executed it really well. But
time for a 3,000-word deep dive into the benefits of not being at a Premier League academy, isn't it? That's what he learned.
We tracked down the originator of crab football.
Yeah, exactly.
West Ham are bad, aren't they? Roberto Barney, not he's not the best, is he?
No, he's an interesting goalie because he. I think I read you can't accuse me of not trying. There's this incredible show of energy and movement, and he's always doing something, but somehow the ball is always bouncing past him while he's doing five or six things with his body. I mean, it's one of those weird things where it's hard to undermine managers because they know about football a lot more. They see these players all the time. But now and then there's a situation where you think, how is it possible that professional, experienced manager who's been in this sport for 40 years can't see how bad his goalie is?
Apparently they're trying to get Jordan Archer, who was released by Millwall.
And I mean, yeah.
That's what Jacob's writing today.
Jordan Archer was at Spurs originally and was kind of highly rated, but anyone who watched him regularly in the Championship would find that an amusing substitution.
Well, they have, I think it's David Martin, who was at Millwall for a spell last season, I think. He's on the bench for them, and I don't see why he isn't getting a chance because he's very experienced. He's 33 years old, like he's not a kid. And their current goalkeeper, I think, is now at the stage where he needs to be taken out of the team for his own psychological well-being, if nothing else, because he's getting openly ridiculed by his own fans. That's not going to help his confidence in any way.
Did you see the bit where he saved a free kick directly at him? And there's this huge roar of sarcastic applause from all the home fans. I kind of watched him for about 10 seconds after that. And you could feel the kind of, he's kind of pretended to just sort of walk around feeling okay. But you really felt terrible for him. I think you're completely right.
West Ham are starting to look for alternatives to Pellegrini. Interest in Chris Hughton and Sean Dyche apparently would be interested in talking to them. Benitez is admired, but probably too expensive. Is it the beginning of the end for Manuel Pellegrini?
I think so. I mean, there's a feeling people who know better than me have spoken about just a slight lack of detail and lack of basic attention on opponents and planning, which, you know, there's a bare minimum now of being absolutely fascinated with what your opponents have been doing. He seems to be slightly winging it from what I hear.
Spurs home to Olympiacos on Tuesday in the Champions League. To the Etihad, Manchester City 2, Chelsea 1. Great game, I thought. Chelsea went ahead, thoroughly deserved to. Jonathan, were they unlucky not to get something from this game?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the first sort of half an hour, City just weren't there at all. I think it's City's like lowest possession ever, or Guardiola's lowest possession ever, I think, in a senior game. I think I read that somewhere. And it felt like a very strange game in that City, who have traditionally not only dominated most of their games, but specifically, you know, these big games, they tend to control the ball and control territory, were kind of been given the runaround a little bit. And I think there were slightly fortuitous deflections, you know, to get level, and then I think they sort of the muscle memory kicked back in, and Chelsea's like lack of experience cost them a little bit. But for half an hour, yeah, they look very ordinary.
And a lovely goal from Kante. That ball from Kovacic is beautiful, Barney, and he's really good. And no one thought he was any good last year.
Who? Kovacic?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he was trying very hard to play the system he was asked, I think, as was Jorginho. And you know, even though people go on about Sarri as though it was some dreadful year, they did very well in the end. And he clearly a very good player. We used to give people a bit of time to adjust. He seems to have adjusted this year. And Kante as well has... we all remember how angry everyone was about him being asked to play 10 yards to the right of where he used to play. He's really adapted his game. I mean, the forward run was really good, and he's now scored three goals this season in not many games.
So is he sort of doing what he was... Is he sort of in the same place he was in last year?
Yeah, but he's...
But people aren't angry because Frank Lampard's the manager?
Yeah, and because he's playing well, he's got used to it. He's a good player who's found a few other things in his game, which presumably Sarri always thought he could do. I always feel with Kante, we got so excited about him when he was Player of the Year, and we've always had a sort of thing about the holding midfield role. We all felt very pleased and sophisticated to identify that he was very good at this. And he was good at it in a way that was quite typically English. I mean, charges into tackles and he's very fast. And then everyone got incredibly possessive and angry with when Sarri tried to move him slightly. But, you know, he's a good midfielder and he's playing very well in a slightly broader role.
How can City push Liverpool?
I don't think they can. I see... I mean, Liverpool didn't have it all their own way against Crystal Palace either, but I see a lot more signs of fallibility in City. You always get a feeling they're going to concede a goal or two. And I can only see them dropping further behind, to be honest, because Liverpool have shown no signs, or very few signs, that they're going to drop too many points. They're, what, 9 clear of City? And I have a feeling maybe... If anyone is going to give Liverpool a run for the money, it might actually be Leicester rather than Manchester City.
Pep, after the game, said, "I know we're winners and losers and that's all, but I think it's not a good message for society, for our kids, for our teenagers, showing that just the winner is perfect. We are creating a depressed people, loser people. In football, I know we want to win, but just win once and the other is a disaster. It's not. It doesn't work in that way."
I quite like that. I've not heard that. I quite appreciate that sentiment. We get far too hung up on winning and losing, especially in something like football where it's so arbitrary and the numbers are so low and everything stands or falls on whether this ball goes in off the post or somebody's back. So, yeah, that's a great philosophy.
It is, but is it coming from Pep?
It seems a slightly odd coming from... Probably if I were to identify one human being I've ever seen who's totally obsessed with winning, it'd probably be him. But, you know, maybe he's seen the light and he's worried about the depressed loser people.
Is he just getting his excuses in early?
Well, a cynic would suggest that. But, I do like the message. People can change. Just look at Jose, Barney.
Yeah, he's very humble.
He is. That offside goal at the end is very tight between Zuma's buttock and Sterling's.
Here it comes.
Here we go.
So we can talk about armpits.
Anthony says, given that Sterling had a goal disallowed by VAR primarily due to the slenderness of Kurt Zouma's backside, is there now a case to use buttock curvature as a selection criteria? If so, who would the panel select for their all-time best or worst? I would think Viduka would be offside all the time.
Johnny Hartson in his pomp. Eamon Dunphy and RTE famously sort of used his TV pen to draw a big ring around John Hartson's arse when he was a Wimbledon player and go, that is not the sign of a professional athlete.
Dalglish, famously, his entire sort of power was located in his...
Did he have
backside.
Protruding buttocks?
Yeah, Brian Clough famously sort of raved about the power of his backside.
David Conn's got an exclusive in the paper today saying he's talked to Bruce Buck, who says that Roman Abramovich remains just as involved as he has ever been, has no plans to sell Chelsea.
What you hear from Roman Abramovich will be whatever Roman Abramovich feels is the right thing to say to you. I mean, there's not much you can really say about that.
No, but it was an interesting story, I thought. Yeah. Actually, interesting in David's piece is about when Abramovich arrived, he basically wanted to buy a football club and he was said, look, you should really buy Chelsea, Spurs or Aston Villa. I'm quite interested to see how, in his parallel world, what would have happened if he'd been the new Doug Ellis.
What he wanted to do was to gain influence and to make himself into a sort of indispensable public figure in Britain, which he did and has done. I think it's pretty obvious that the ins and outs of what happens on the pitch aren't particularly anything he's obsessed by. Whatever the long game was in buying Chelsea has worked, and whatever he tells you about it, will be something that you should listen to through various hats, to be honest.
I really like this idea that because Abramovich hasn't been at Stamford Bridge, he hasn't been in the UK, he's almost, you know, people are saying, oh, he's taken a bit of a back seat. He's kind of less interested in Chelsea, almost as if, you know, he was this incredibly hands-on, visible owner back in the his heyday when he was applauding very slowly from the executive box. And now he's on his yacht or, you know, moored off the coast of Dubrovnik. He can't just sort of pick up the phone and manage things. He's actually, you know, he's gone. He's like an absent dad or something.
City home to Shakhtar and Chelsea go to Valencia. The early kickoff on Wednesday is a 5:55 kickoff to Bramall Lane. Sheffield United 3, Manchester United 3. Chris Wilder after the game won it, lost it, and got a result out of it. This was brilliant, Barry, wasn't it?
Yeah, I really loved it. Manchester United were shockingly bad then for 75 minutes, then staggeringly good. And then pretty bad again, sort of in the course of the game. I still can't figure out how they went from being so dreadful to so good without sort of appearing to go through the gears in any way. It's like someone just flicked a switch and suddenly. And then when they had the game won against, you know, you kind of look at how on earth are they winning this game 3-2 when they've been so terrible. Then they sat back and invited Sheffield United to score an equaliser, which I think Sheffield United deserved. Chris Wilder sees it as a 0.1. I would see it as 2 lost for his side. They were superb.
Do you think Ollie saved his job with that comeback? Or is that too much?
Maybe. It's a weird club, Man United, isn't it? We're always wondering what's wrong with them. Why aren't they winning everything? Whereas
it's all Jose Mourinho's fault, well, Barney.
Jose's fault, yeah. I mean, if you look at the history of them, I mean, Wilson's written about this. Only basically 2 people have really ever won anything there. And they've both been Scottish blokes who happen to have a really good crop of players come through at the right time. And what they're trying to do with Solskjaer is create... Everybody said, you haven't got a plan. There's no plan. So they've now decided to have a plan, which is to have lots of young players come through, which is a kind of Man United style thing. And we often criticize teams are supposed to have a DNA, aren't they? And I suppose that is their DNA. But it's all a little bit forced. It's like, well, that really worked before, so let's do it. It's like that bit in Groundhog Day where he had this really perfect day and it really worked. And then he tries to really force it again, throwing snowballs and having fun. And it's all going to be great this time. And it doesn't quite work because it's not a natural process, which is what happened with, I guess, with Ferguson and Busby, where they, you know, this just happened to be the perfect storm.
In the iPaper today, Sam Cunningham quotes Sir Alex Ferguson saying once, Phil Jones arguably could be our best ever player.
I feel a little bit sorry for Phil Jones. I mean, he is, I think people have kind of made up their minds about him and sort of see what they want to see in Phil Jones. And I feel it's slightly unfair because this is a guy who's been plagued by injuries for sort of 6 or 7 years, and you can't just sort of give him a game every 4 months, sort of chuck him into a Premier League game against a really good side and he struggles for 45, oh well, he's terrible, and then give, you know, and then give him another game in 4 months. So he looked like a guy who just hasn't played much football, who looked short of match fitness, who looked short of contact, and who was just getting bustled off by bigger, stronger, fitter boys.
I mean, I would say smaller, fitter, stronger boys.
Well, yeah, smaller, fitter, stronger, more robust.
But that's
boys.
It. I mean, as a young player, he was the reason Ferguson sort of said that, he was physically prodigious. You know, he had this combination of strength and size and speed and mobility. But yeah, as Jonathan says, obviously he's comes in, he's not quite in condition. He probably just hasn't developed, and players have developed around him in all that time. And there's a lot of very smaller, mobile footballers, and he looks suddenly like this kind of dinosaur.
But with that first goal, I mean, I still find it strange that players are so reluctant to kick a ball out for a throw-in. I mean, it's not a disastrous outcome, is it, when you kick the ball out?
It's less disastrous than conceding a goal or allowing your opponent across, sure, but you know, I don't play football. I presume there was some sort of method to his madness. I agree with the lads. I think it's unfair. He didn't play well, but he was obviously rusty. He hasn't played much, and it's unfair to scapegoat him for Manchester United's collectively appalling performance. I think without I'm leaving out the 10-minute spell where they scored the three goals, but David De Gea kept them in the game. He was brilliant, but the rest of them were pretty diabolical for the majority of the game.
Well, Solskjaer says last year we would have been 3-4-5 down. This is a big stride for them. And he said sometimes it's beyond tactics. But I'd say Sheffield United had tactics.
Well, they were the better set-up side. I think Solskjaer said in his interview afterwards, they asked him, what did you say at half time? He said, oh, well, I had to get them to play. I had to get them to, you know, to run more, to get into their tackle. I was like, well, why are they not doing that? What was your job for like the last week? And you have to sort of go in at half time and say, guys, there's a game going on. You have to run, you have to tackle. It was kind of a strange excuse.
Sort of wanting it more excuse. That Sheffield United just wanted it more.
That's sort of an interesting thing though, isn't it, about professional sport, that does happen, even with these guys whose entire life is to go out there and perform and do these things. It's possible to have either a collective or individual sort of freeze where you're just not doing it. And it's one of the things it's kind of hard to understand from the outside, and I've never quite got. So there's plenty of footballers who, you on the face of it, don't appear to be as talented as other ones, but who don't have that fit. I've saw this the thing before about John Terry, where he kept playing for England under Fabio Capello, and there was a sort of lunch with the press where he sort of asked off the record, why are you still picking John Terry? You know what? He can barely run. And Franco Baldini, his assistant, said, well, every other player shits themselves in the dressing room. They put the shirt on, they're sat there completely silent, whereas Terry's walking around laughing and chapping everyone around the face and cheering everyone. And they were basically playing him because he wasn't terrified. Which is something you just don't really see from the outside.
Would you?
I think it's unfair to say that Sheffield United just wanted it more. Like they clearly did, but they totally overwhelmed Manchester United in that first half, and Manchester United didn't know how to cope. I mean, they just didn't know what to do, and I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer knew how to fix the problem, because Sheffield United were pinging balls in behind, you know, up the flanks for. Their midfielders to chase, their pressing is immense, their levels of energy, and their players just can slot into each other's positions so seamlessly that opposition teams really struggle to deal with it. And I don't think I've seen any team struggle to deal with it as much as Manchester United did in that first half.
I haven't seen or heard anyone explain how to deal with Sheffield United either. I haven't heard a sort of a tactical response. I haven't seen a side do it.
We were chatting about this yesterday. Like say David McGoldrick, I think people from who don't follow Sheffield United closely see him as this guy who's played 10 Premier League games and hasn't scored yet, and he was very unlucky once again yesterday not to get off the mark with it. He was denied by an excellent David De Gea save. But you know, a Sheffield United fan told us yesterday he's arguably their most important player because of his movement. He drops back into midfield when the runners come through. He covers other players' positions, and you know, he's brilliant at holding the ball up, at laying it off. And teams are struggling to work them out.
I think nobody's kind of really worked out how to play against them yet. But I mean, it's kind of similar to how when Leicester went on their run in 15-16, it took teams most of the season because they hadn't really seen a team playing like this in so long. But the way United sort of set up against them was a particularly bad way of playing against them, as like having Fred and Pereira basically trying to cover about 60 yards in the centre and just totally getting outnumbered every time because they were runners all around them. So yeah, I mean they've been a bit of a mystery, Sheffield United. But I mean, there are better ways of setting up against them than that.
And that'll do for part one. Part two will begin at the Emirates. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Your last chance to see Barry Glendening alive is on Wednesday at the O2, Indigo at the O2. Barry, me, you, Jonathan Wilson, Ellis James.
Yes, getting close now, isn't it?
We're 2 days away.
We've had three meetings.
Yeah. It's not a sellout yet.
Oh, that's a shame. But hopefully the last few seats will be snapped up in the next couple of days.
Please come along to Indigo at the O2. That's on Wednesday. On the 20th of December, me, Lars, Jonathan Wilson and one more are doing the Belgrave Music Hall in Leeds. And January the 27th is sold out. 28th over halfway, Liberty Hall in Dublin. Me, Barry, plus two more. Eamon says, do none of the other podcast regulars want to come to Dublin? Or are you finally announcing today? How do you feel about live shows, Jonathan?
Oh, no. Jonathan, the producer, Jonathan's asked me about this. I have to clear something else out. I think I can do Leeds.
Right.
But I think I have to clear something else out of the diary before I can
commit to Dublin.
Yeah, because it's
what else is in the diary? What's more important?
It's my wife's grandmother's 90th birthday in Finland. So I might have to go back to Finland.
Couldn't get them over to Dublin to be part of the show?
No, she can't really leave her apartment.
Oh, okay.
So I think getting her to Dublin might be a bit of a stretch. So, TBC on that.
Okay, see what you can do. At the Emirates, Arsenal 2, Southampton 2. Arsenal, five games without a win in the league, Barney. But this was 2 points dropped for Southampton.
Yeah, they played well and they seem to have really rallied after the, obviously got battered out of sight a few weeks back. But it's another game where Arsenal just seem to sort of there's something missing in the middle of the team. They're like in between the words A and L. There's this sort of nothing there. You seem to be able to just run straight through Arsenal. I don't quite understand how that's happened, particularly given the way Emery traditionally sort of built his teams as being, objects of some resilience and resistance. There seems to be a real problem. Again, it was a sort of sour occasion at the Emirates where there was booing and obviously the crowd turned a bit on the players. I mean, this was noted by the opposition. I think James Ward-Prowse mentioned it in his post-match interview. And you sort of wonder, of all the problems that the Emirates crowd, you kind of wonder at what point they might feel that the Emirates crowd is the problem, which, without sort of victim blaming, the whole club has been sort of geared towards this crowd. We're going to attract this match day crowd, which is going to be more affluent, is going to pay lots of money to come and see us. It's going to feel entitled to see Wenger style teams winning. And they kind of are the problem in a way. It's impossible to satisfy them.
Yes. But I mean, that moment when Sokratis wanders around the box until he's picked off by Cedric, who balls up the cross, it's hard to blame the crowd for that.
Yeah, of course. And the players, some of the players aren't good enough, but they're certainly not playing as well as they could have done. And I wouldn't feel that the succession from Wenger to, the end years there were particularly... I think maybe you attract the kind of... You get an owner like that because you're willing... I don't mean it's consciously their fault. I mean, as a group of people who exist and will buy tickets and are in London and will fill the stadium, it's kind of they're part of the same process, which has attracted an owner who simply wants to take quite a lot of money out of the club. And the whole system around them, including the Emirates crowd, is the problem, which is maybe why they feel so angry with themselves.
On the pitch, last three games, Southampton, Leicester and Wolves, they've had 30 shots and had to defend against 64. So opponents taking double the number of shots against them.
When I look at Arsenal, they seem to make the same mistakes all the time. And a lot of that comes from their insistence, or presumably Unai Emery's insistence, on his players playing the ball out from the back when they're clearly incapable of doing it properly. So that immediately gives their opponents an advantage. I think he's also playing players out of position, like Lucas Torreira seems very unhappy. He's never seems to play in his right position. And there just seems to be a general air of haplessness about them. And I thought David Luiz would be a decent signing, to be honest, and I couldn't have been more wrong, because his performances are just constantly chaotic and he makes a lot of mistakes. Sokratis makes a lot of mistakes. Kieran Tierney hasn't really established himself yet. I know he's a new boy and he came with an injury, but...
He looked nervous, didn't he? And he looked so crestfallen when he gave away that penalty.
I thought he had a bit of a mirror in that game. And, they were they got a point, but they were very, very lucky to get a point against a team that is not good and that a team that got tonked 9-0 not so long ago by Leicester.
Yeah, Gineppo missed two big chances after coming on, didn't he? No real celebration from Lacazette when he equalised. And Aubameyang, in his first eight games this season, he scored eight. He's got just one in his last eight. It's a question from Jason saying, for 5 years as a Spurs fan, I've had to defend Pochettino's no trophies record against Arsenal fans. But now that he's available, they want him on the mantle. What has changed?
I mean, you know, that was always a bit of a... He's obviously a really good manager and really bright and really good at arranging teams. And I'm sure he could create a kind of uplift for them. I mean, but if you look at it, Arsenal are eighth in the Premier League. While there are obviously some things that are not quite right in the team, they're still eighth. And in the Premier League, all these teams... I mean, they lost... They drew with Southampton, but every team in the Premier League now has enough money to buy players who are good and can play well against you and score goals and have a good day. So it's not exactly a case of being in crisis if these teams with extremely good footballers who would flourish in other leagues will occasionally draw or beat you.
Yeah, but it's more than occasional, though, for Arsenal, right?
Where should they be? Fifth? Should they be 2 points higher in the league? I mean, they're not about to get relegated or die. They have a few sort of things wrong in the team, and they're still eighth. We are simply being unhappy consumers on Oxford Street, unable to get on the bus, I feel.
Do Everton fans, do they have a right, Jonathan, to feel they're in crisis? Or, you know, because obviously they're not in London, so they're sort of happier types, you know. Life is slower and more tranquil. It's easier for them. But I thought the loudest boos were at Goodison after that 2-0. Defeat to Norwich.
Yeah, it seems to be a thing these days. As soon as your team concedes a goal, you boo them. I mean, I don't know if this did this used to happen.
I think it might have done. I don't know. I can't remember. I wouldn't like at Cambridge. You'd never booed anyone because there's no point. Didn't change anything.
I mean, what I would say is it must be an incredibly bad time to be an Everton fan right now. You know, you look across the city and see what Liverpool are doing, and you've got your team. Assembled an incredible expense that just don't really seem to have not only a clue what they're doing, but a kind of identity, or you know, they don't really, I don't know, they don't really know what they're doing there, a lot of them. And there was a you know, Norwich's first goal, I think, and it's Yerry Mina and Holgate, and they're both of them, they're just kind of leaving it to each other. You deal with this. The collective lack of responsibility is really quite staggering.
Yeah, they've lost against all three promoted sides. All three games they lost 2-0. Even so, Barry, I didn't think that Norwich would win this football match.
No, it seems to have been the coupon buster over the weekend. I still think Norwich will go down, but they've given themselves a very good chance. You know, that there's no team yet that you can look at and go, they are doomed, you know, in the Premier League, I think.
I mean, Norwich, everyone thought it would be them, didn't they?
Yeah.
Quite early on. But the manager has quickly gone from seeming like he'd be that hapless guy, it's all going to go wrong. But he's actually a very sort of likeable person. I really look forward to his post-match. He's got a conviction about him, which sort of I feel probably speaks to the players as well. He really emphasises certain words, and he seems entirely lost in the occasion. I like him a lot, and I think footballers are easily swayed by things like that. He's got a kind of strange kind of light around him.
The Mirror went big last night with the news that Marco Silva may not be long for this world, is what producer Jonathan writes. That's maybe a touch extreme, but long for Everton. David Moyes is the front runner to replace him. Would you like to see Moyes back at Goodison, Jonathan?
Yeah, why not? I mean, that would be... And we were talking about Mourinho at Spurs as, you know, the plot twist that season... You know, 28 of Premier League needed. And I think Moyes back to Everton, there's a...
Is that like Harold Bishop coming back to life? Or is that like just Doug Willis going out for a few weeks and coming back in?
It's more like that episode of Dallas where it turned out the entire previous series had been a dream. I was like,
Moyes comes out of the shower, Bobby Ewing stuff.
Moyes comes out of the shower. Everything that happened between 2013 and 2019, it didn't actually happen. You just imagined it.
Yeah. But have you seen Everton's fixture list?
Amazing, isn't it?
Leicester, Liverpool, Chelsea, Man U, Arsenal. And that's their next five league games.
Sean says, away kit crime, that is enough now. Why did Norwich wear all red against Everton? I thought that was a... I mean, it's a total disgrace. and it looked pretty much it just didn't look like Everton were playing Norwich. It looked like they were playing Galatasaray or Spain. I was deeply unhappy about it. I understand it's for marketing or something, but make it stop. Liverpool won 2-1 at Crystal Palace. Barney, was this the dogged fighting spirit of champions digging out a victory, or were Liverpool really lucky?
That's become a thing to say, isn't it? That these are the games you win. But Crystal Palace are quite good. Roy Hodgson is actually quite good at playing the teams higher in the league at home. He's done well against City a few times, and they played well against Liverpool last year, and he's quite good at sending them out to disrupt the game plan. And Liverpool are a very good team and keep on winning, but obviously they're not as important as Jose Mourinho being back at Spurs, so let me get on with that.
Palace have more shots on target, more corners, big chances, Jordan Ayew, Zaha at the end.
If Jordan Ayew is your main goal threat, that's something you need to buy a striker. Jordan Ayew is not a good player.
This has been Palace's issue for years. I mean, I think going back to Neil Warnock and the Ian Holloway days, they've been through so many. I mean, like Shamak, DJ Campbell.
When was the last great Crystal Palace centre forward?
Glenn Murray. But they never quite...
Oh, true.
Yeah, they didn't quite use... They didn't trust in Glenn Murray. That was the problem.
They thought they could do better than Glenn Murray.
And they couldn't.
Dwight Gayle's been there as well.
Like Benteke.
Connor Wickham never got going, but he has been sidelined for a long time with injury.
Doogie Friedman.
Yeah.
He was good, wasn't he?
Decent.
Right and Bright.
Yeah, I mean, those were the days.
Basically, Crystal Palace's best striker is currently being cranky and hungry in a jungle in Australia.
Jonathan, I'd like your VAR reaction to the disallowed goal for Crystal Palace. Ayew pushes Lovren. Does he or doesn't he? Is the ball going over Lovren's head? Does that matter?
I think his main, the main drawback there was that it was too blatant a push. If you're going to push someone, I mean, I think the surreptitious thing to do is to give him a sneaky tug, where nobody can see, where the ref can't see, and out of sight. But this was a really blatant two hands in the back. I mean,
it was pretty similar to the push which earned Crystal Palace the free kick in the first place. So
true.
It was a two-hander. It was like pushing someone on a swing or on a toboggan down a hill. Jonathan says it's not bad technique.
It's a foul.
Liverpool host Napoli on Wednesday night.
I'm going to that.
Oh, that's not. Well, you're looking forward to it?
Yeah, I am actually, because the away game was really fascinating. Napoli played really well against Liverpool and sort of shut down their fullbacks. And, that was the best I've seen anyone play against Liverpool for a year and a half, I guess. So it'd be interesting to see what the comeback on that is.
Leicester, Barry, you say are the team that you think, if anyone will catch Liverpool, will be them. I don't know if that's overplaying what you're saying. But
I think it is slightly. I don't think anyone will get near Liverpool, barring an almighty Devon Locke on their part.
But don't you think it'd be amazing if it comes down to the last three games and it's less Brendan Rodgers versus Liverpool, and this time he doesn't bottle it, they do? Wouldn't that be good? Wouldn't that be a fun twist?
It would be very entertaining.
Excellent news, wouldn't it? I don't know if this was a straightforward victory, but Brighton,
I think it was.
So
they were very dominant, and it probably should have had a few goals in the account before they opened the scoring with a blistering account with that excellent first goal. I mean, Farrelly's pace is just remarkable, and I assumed he would slow down and have to change his game, but he seems as quick as he ever was, despite some of his questionable lifestyle choices. I'm thinking, the Skittles in the vodka, which perhaps he doesn't imbibe in anymore. But they're just a very, very good football team.
Watford 0, Burnley 3. Chris Woods with the opener. Good stat from Duncan Alexander. That goal from Wood means Wood goes to the top of the building material Premier League goal charts. Wood on 27, Stones on 26, Cook 13, Glass 7, and Granite 7. I really enjoyed Ashley Barnes just hurtling after Paul Tierney all the way to the end of the pitch, desperately asking for a penalty. And it was a penalty, so I'm not...
Am I not correct in thinking that players are supposed to be booked if they demand the intervention of VAR?
I thought it was only if they did the charade, the TV charade. That's a booking. If you're running after the referee.
There's definitely been an increase in ambient cajoling as a result, because there's now a chance you might be rewarded if you make a big fuss. But, you know, players have found a way around it.
So, could you go and harangue the referee, but not making the TV symbol? Mm. Like if you do the... like the cinema gesture from a game of charades, you know.
Yeah.
You know, three words. The
one hand up straight, turny with the other hand.
Yeah,
I think that's totally.
Would that be legal?
I don't think that's in. I mean, we haven't gone to IFAB. Burnley seventh on 18 points. It's so tight. From Wolves, who are fifth with 19 points. West Ham, obviously in crisis, 13 points and 16th. Wolves won 2-1 at Bournemouth. They were second bottom without a win 7 games ago. That's a good little run for them, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they're a good team, aren't they? And they've started playing as they should.
And Traore has just caused Bournemouth so much trouble. And he is a lot of fun, Jonathan.
Yeah, he's quick, he's fast, and he's got pace. He's really good. I really like that. That's from a sketch show from about 10 years ago, and the reference will be lost on about 99% of the audience.
Yeah, but for that 1%, it's important.
Yeah, for the 1% are going like, hell yes. He's a great player. I think he's always been. I've always liked him a little bit more than he's kind of shown. You know, when he was at Middlesbrough, he was good fun to watch, but didn't really produce. And I think he's got a really nice understanding with Jimenez now, and they linked up again for the second goal. He's a good fun player, and Wolves are doing extremely well, especially considering they've got Europe to contend with as well.
It's Aston Villa versus Newcastle tonight. An excellent stat from Joe Donoghue saying Newcastle United have a manager called Steve, an assistant manager called Steve, a first team coach called Steve, a head scout called Steve, and now a goalkeeping coach called Steve. Steve Castle United, which I'm very pleased about.
Yeah.
In the Football League, in the Championship, West Brom are still top, winning 2-1 over Sheffield Wednesday. Charlie Austin scoring the winning goal from the spot with 2 minutes left. Barry, did you remember Charlie Austin was at West Brom?
No, actually, I didn't.
No, there he is.
I don't think he's... was that his first goal for them, I think?
He's not starting a lot.
Yeah, he hasn't been a great move for him, which is a shame because I like Charlie Austin.
Yeah, well, at least he scored the winner. That Leeds move up to second after beating Luton. Matt Pearson's late own goal means it's 5 defeats in a row for the Hatters. Third place, Preston lost at Derby. Neil Harris's first game in charge of Cardiff ended in a draw at Charlton as they came back from 2 goals down. You wish him well, Neil?
Yeah, of course. Although... Millwall won away and have begun doing fancy things with tactics in his absence. They played with wing backs.
Stop it.
Yeah, it was a big deal, and without a centre forward, and won away at Swansea.
That's a great win, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is for them. It's kind of, and I saw an interview with Gary Rowett after, and he kept talking about using words, complicated words. There's a lot of that in the Championship. You have to be slightly wary of people trying to. You know, recreate the Ajax team of the 1970s. A lot of bad, slow passing football teams around, but Millwall fans are quite excited.
He's aged very well, Gary Rowett. I remember him as a soft, spotty, ginger 17-year-old centre forward for Cambridge before he became a right back and then a centre back.
Oh, no, he's now a very handsome middle aged man.
Mm. In League One, Wickham 5 points clear at the top after a last minute winner over Doncaster. Ipswich in second were held at home by Blackpool. They've got 2 games in hand. Bolton had a man sent off after 14 minutes and lost 7-1 at Accrington Stanley. They're on 1 point. Meanwhile, since Sol Campbell took over at Southend, they've lost all their league games. A 4-0 home defeat to Oxford this time. They've conceded 52 goals this season, Southend, and have just 5 points. In League Two, 5 wins in a row for leaders Swindon. This one, 1-0 over Mansfield. Below them, Forest Green, Crewe, Exeter and Northampton all won. The mighty Cambridge United went to Carlisle and didn't have a shot on target. Long way to go for a 0-0. Have you seen Barry Robbie Savage has signed for Stockport Town in the 10th tier?
No.
It's not a PR stunt, he says. it's me trying to help youngsters progress in the game. They play in the Northwest Counties.
How does him signing for Stockport Town? What's the name of the team?
Stockport Town.
How does Robbie Savage signing for Stockport Town help kids progress in the game?
He says, I want to try and give a bit of what I went through in my career with rejection, rehabilitation, and the mental side of football. I'm not going to run games. I'll need legs around me. My son had to go and buy me some boots today. He then joked, what a great opportunity for youngsters to play with a legend like me.
Certainly great for any kids wanting to get in the broadcasting game. Does this take him off our airwaves? Or will he be keeping his extremely, you know, lucrative and well-received media gigs?
I presume he will.
He's not going full time then.
Well, there's a documentary in this, isn't there?
I'm sure. Like a 30 for 30 or something. The two savages.
Yes. Charithi Jonathan says Stockport is quite close to, you know, Media City in Salford, isn't it? So he could pop straight to 606 after the game. Good luck to him. Anyway, in the WSL, the top five all won. Chelsea are on 19 points after a 6-0 win at Birmingham. A point behind Man City, Arsenal, who beat Bristol City and Leicester, respectively. Enya Luko's announced she's leaving Juventus after 18 months with the club, having won all three domestic trophies that were available, as well as finishing as the club's top scorer last season. She's moving back to London in December with a move to an unnamed English side in the pipeline. Fitbar Corner, Barry.
I actually watched St. Johnstone against Aberdeen yesterday, and referees in Scotland get a lot of stick, and they seem to get more than down here, which is saying something. But it was an absolutely appalling decision. The game ended, St. Johnstone, bottom of the Scottish Premiership, held Aberdeen to a 1-1 draw. But Aberdeen had a goal, well, were denied a penalty. It was quite extraordinary. One of their players, Curtis Main, was about to head in a cross, looked certain to score, and St. Johnstone's Wallace Duffy, who's possibly the most Scottish-sounding footballer of all time, basically LeBron James, leapt in the air and flicked the ball away up with his hand, which, a stonewall penalty, and I would imagine a red card as well, possibly. And the ref missed it. So that left Derek McInnes in quite a bad mood after the game. But Aberdeen should have won at their leisure. St. Johnstone ended up reduced to 9 men, but they held on to get the point. And Aberdeen have just announced that they're going into partnership, sort of a commercial partnership with Atlanta from the MLS.
It's a TV show.
Pardon?
The TV show. That would be amazing.
Not the TV show, not the Serie A side, the MLS club of the same name or a similar name.
Who are very successful.
Yeah. And so there, Aberdeen are about to appoint a new chairman, Dave Cormack. He's a US-based Aberdonian businessman who I think is a fan of Atlanta United. So they're going to buy a small stake in the club, and they're set up this commercial partnership. There'll be a few million quid invested in Aberdeen, so it may help make them more competitive elsewhere in the planet. Fitbar, there's, you know, the usual perfunctory wins for Celtic and Rangers. Celtic are still top of the table, but not much in it.
Scottish Cup, some fun team names there. BSC Glasgow beat East 5-4-3. So they'll play East Kilbride in the next round. Bonnie Rigg Rose will go up against Clyde after a 2-1 win over Montrose. The lowest ranked team, Broxburn Athletic, the East of Scotland Premier Division, will travel to St Mirren after beating Inverurie Loco Works. And Falkirk will either travel to Arbroath or Auchinleck Talbot.
I think they progressed quite far last season.
Auchinleck Talbot.
Yes. Oh. It rings a bell anyway. Actually, I was saying St. Johnstone's Wallace Duffy is possibly the most Scottish-sounding footballer of all time, but his two teammates just got sent off, run him close. They're Murray Davidson and Callum Hendry.
Tremendous. But not a muck in sight.
No.
Wallace Duffy clearly is a part-time detective, solves crimes in his spare time, and he goes into you know, the office and like, "You've gone too far this time, Duffy." I was like, "I've never gone too far."
Good job with a bad attitude, that kind of detective.
Wallace Duffy, I mean, he probably, you know...
Liu is muscling in on Wilson territory here.
Wilson, your limits. Wilson is the detective who plays by the rules, remember. Maybe Wilson and Duffy would work well together. That'll do for part two. Part three, we'll round up Europe. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start in Spain with Sid Lowe. Sid, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
I'm really good, thanks very much. So Real Madrid and Barcelona tied on 28 points, both of them won. Barcelona's win, extremely unconvincing.
Yeah, really, really bad. I mean, I'll give you an example. Probably the best one is the headline on the front of Sport, which if you can hear that rustling noise, that is actually me looking through the papers, right? The front of Sport from Sunday morning, the headline is just "Worrying Victory." Obviously, you're not supposed to be worried about a victory, but they were awful. And it's in the context of them fundamentally not playing well pretty much all season. And yet you look at some of the, what would you call it, the metrics? Is that the right word? That sounds ridiculous. Some of the sort of measurements of how good a team are, and theirs are very good. They've scored more goals than anyone else, as you say. They're top of the table, and they're a long way ahead in terms of the number of goals they've scored against other teams. They've got really, really good players, but they haven't got a team at the moment. It's completely disconnected. There's no sense of a structure. There's no sense of them performing with anything like any kind of flow or a clear idea about what they're trying to do. And they won this weekend 2-1 away at the team that's bottom of the table. And also one of the other worrying things, I think, from Barcelona's point of view is that it sort of feels like no one's quite grasping how bad this could be, because of course they're top of the Champions League group as well. So there's a sense, well, it's okay, and you know, these performances will come, but the risk, of course, is that rather than the performances starting to come, the results will start to be as bad as the performances. And if they were to lose in the Champions League in midweek, they would then be in a position where they basically have to go to Milan and probably have to win to get through the Champions League group. They play against Atletico Madrid away at the weekend, so there's a reasonably strong possibility that they won't be top as of next Monday. And in the meantime, it looks like Real Madrid are finding their feet. Atletico aren't, but Real Madrid are. And Barcelona just don't look good at all.
Real Madrid finding their feet. They beat Real Sociedad 3-1, also coming from behind. How was the reaction to Gareth Bale coming on?
At the risk of sounding like I'm building this up, I'm going to build this up.
Good.
I've never heard anything like it at the Bernabeu. In terms of that unanimity of abuse, of whistling, of booing. Now, obviously, I say unanimity. There were some people making a very conscious point of trying to stand and clap and saying, we're supporting him, he's our player. But it felt like almost the entire stadium. I've never heard it that loud. I've never heard it that relentless, that continuous. So he goes to warm up and there's whistles and boos. He goes to the touchline to come on and he's standing there and there's some whistles and boos. The player who goes off, who I must admit my mind's gone completely blank. I can't remember who goes off now. I think it's Federico Valverde, but I'm not sure. Comes off, or maybe it's Rodrigo, comes off and they clap and applaud very loudly, and then Bale comes on and they boo very loudly. First touch, they boo him. Second touch, it's a chance in the area and he scuffs a volley and they boo him. Third touch, he provides the pass which leads to the third goal. So, of course, there's a celebration there, but they're booing him when he provides it. And then there's a moment when they're celebrating the goal where the players are to the left of the goal, Bale is to the right from where he's delivered the cross, and Casemiro and Valverde, so it can't have been Valverde who'd gone off, Casemiro and Valverde run to him and kind of make a point of bringing him into the group and sort of celebrating with him. But then the next time he gets the ball, they whistle him again. Now, it starts to decrease. And he actually played really well in the 22, 23 minutes he was on the pitch. And at the end, he nearly scores a brilliant goal. And as he's lying on the floor, there's a kind of a gentle smattering of applause, which is not much, but I suppose it's a start.
Sevilla in third, just a point behind. Atleti drew their seventh game in 10. Do we have a chance of a four-way title race?
I think we might have. I think Sevilla are a good side. I think that it is true, though, that too often, like, and this happened again last night, they're 1-0 up, admittedly, from a penalty, so it's not like they've been absolutely sparkling or anything, but they're 1-0 up, and they defend that 1-0, and they defend it really well, and they never really look like they're suffering. But the fact that it's 1-0 and the game is open going into the last 10 minutes, which, of course, then get a bit frantic, and actually, frankly, last night got a bit dirty and a bit kind of unpleasant at times as well, that's a bit of a worry for Sevilla, because that's happening too often, games that they should kill off. I think if they had a really good striker, we'd be looking at them now and thinking, yeah, they could fight for this league title. I think if they're going to have a chance, they probably need Atletico, Barcelona and Real Madrid to continue being as unconvincing as they've been till now. But as I said, I kind of feel like Barcelona might get it right, although at the moment they're awful. It sort of feels like at some point, surely Atletico can't keep being so drawy, for want of a better word. And Real Madrid certainly are starting to look like they're going to get it right. So I suspect a four-way title, unfortunately, is beyond Sevilla.
Thanks for your time, Sid.
My pleasure.
Sid Lowe out in Spain, from Spain to Germany in the Bundesliga. Mönchengladbach still top. Their lead has been cut to just 1 point after they lost 2-0 at Union Berlin, who now have 4 wins in 5. Just a point behind Gladbach at RB Leipzig and Bayern Munich, who both won against relegation strugglers. Bayern won 4-1 at Fortuna Düsseldorf, which saw the end of Robert Lewandowski's incredible run. He was not among the goalscorers, ending his run of scoring in every league game this season. Friday night's game saw Dortmund struggling down in 6th, take on bottom side Paderborn. Paderborn took a 3-0 lead into half-time before Dortmund came back to draw 3-3, captain Marco Reus scoring the equaliser in the 92nd minute. Still rumours around that Lucien Favre could be getting the sack if Dortmund don't improve at Barcelona or Hertha this week. From Germany to Italy, and this WhatsApp report from Nicky Bandini after a weekend where the top four all won.
Well, I know where you want me to start, Max, which is Chris Smalling scoring for Roma again to help them to a 3-0 win over Brescia. He's now the most prolific Englishman in a Serie A season since David Beckham, which actually isn't very hard because all he needs to do is score twice. But still, they love him in Rome at the moment, and he set up another goal on Sunday as well. The biggest games of the Serie A weekend were all on Saturday, though, beginning with Juventus away to Atalanta. Cristiano Ronaldo was left out of the squad. You may recall that he was last seen in Italy getting subbed off in Juventus' game against Milan and then not even bothering to wait for the match to finish before he left the stadium and went home. Since then, he's played almost two full games for Portugal and scored four goals. But even he has acknowledged now that he has been carrying an injury. He has not been at 100%. And so the agreement was made with the club that he would sit this game out. Juventus were totally outplayed without him, but came back from a goal down to 3-1 with Gonzalo Higuain and Paulo Dybala scoring all of the goals at the end. And there is this little question at the moment of whether Juventus aren't better off without an unfit Ronaldo on the pitch. Both of his last two games he did play, it was players who replaced him who scored the goals. To stress, we're not talking about a fit Ronaldo here. Nobody is suggesting that he shouldn't be in the team if he is at 100%, but there is this question hanging over now of how much he's going to be willing to sit out games to get healthy. It's one thing to miss Atalanta, another to miss Atletico Madrid on Tuesday night. In the league, Inter remain 1 point behind Juventus. They won 3-0 on a horrible wet pitch against Torino, a win soured by Nicolò Barella suffering a serious knee injury that will keep him out until at least the winter break. It was also the week when Inter's manager, Antonio Conte, shared his opinions with us on sex during the football season. He told L'Equipe that players needed to keep it to minimum exertion during periods of competition and always with their partners on top. Not entirely clear whether Lautaro Martinez was agreeing or disagreeing when he was asked about that after the game and told DAZN that at home we relax. Last up, Napoli drew 1-1 away to Milan. Nothing great going on for either team at the moment, really, but Napoli really aren't in a great place as a club as they go into their Champions League visit to Liverpool. Owner Aurelio De Laurentiis is issuing fines to the players who mutinied against his punitive training camp this month, and there have also been reports that he's considering legal action against the ringleaders in that mutiny. These are players in his own current squad that we're talking about for damages to the club's image.
Thank you very much, Nicky. In France, PSG 8 points clear. They beat Lille 2-0. Mauro Icardi getting the opener, his 10th goal in 9 games. Marseille are second, Angers third. Bordeaux are fourth. They all won this weekend. In Holland, teams in the top two divisions didn't play for the first minute of their games this weekend as a reaction to the racist abuse of Excelsior's Ahmed Mendes Moreira by Den Bosch fans last weekend. An extra minute of play was added on in injury time in the first half to make up the time. Den Bosch have apologised to Moreira for declaring the striker mistook crow sounds for racist abuse during the Dutch second division match. The FA has opened an investigation into the incident. Copa Libertadores, Flamengo 2, River Plate 1. Barry, you watched this. What a comeback for Flamengo.
Yeah, it was a decent game. I mean, I wasn't paying a huge amount of attention to it because I was in the pub, but it was on and everyone... It was interesting the way people were not that... didn't know what it was, a lot of people, and then gradually got sucked in because it was quite an entertaining game. I think the fact that the trophy was brought out escorted by a platoon of Star Wars stormtroopers probably helped catch people's attention. And Jonathan Wilson, a friend of the show, was doing the punditry alongside Gilberto Silva on BBC. And it was a good game, huge, brilliant atmosphere. Flamengo, the Brazilian side, were the pretty hot favourites going into it, but they went a goal behind. And it looked like they were going to lose, and then... they scored two late goals, Barbosa with strikes in the 89th and 90 plus 2 minutes to break River Plate hearts.
Did you see Twitter went into meltdown with people switching on BBC Two to watch Michael Portillo's Great Railways? being very angry that a South American football match had been put on in place.
It did seem kind of a... quite like I was... quite happy it was on, and but it did seem quite a random thing to show, and they obviously hadn't planned it brilliantly because
Wilson was invited.
Well, but after the game, there was no time for post match analysis. So I'm curious to know what would have happened if there'd been extra time or penalties. What was due to be on after Portillo's?
Did they cut to straight from Wilson to Portillo?
Pardon?
No, Portillo was dropped.
Really?
Mm. Portillo was dropped for Wilson.
Yeah.
And Wilson was up against Take Me Out and Strictly. So that's a tough gig.
Did you notice Wilson tweeted, "Thanks so much at Mark Chapman, at Gilberto Silva, I had a tremendous time." He certainly never after a pod sent a photo. Yeah,
he's changed.
Hasn't he changed? TV changes people. We'll finish with this question from Richard. Did Barry seriously think capers were fish?
I have a problem in that I'm incapable of remembering which are capers and which are anchovies. So I meant to say anchovies in the tweet in question.
Sky Blue Tom says, "How about a game of what else does Barry think is a fish on tomorrow's pod?" So I've got 10 for you.
Okay.
Here we go. Big eye, square tail. Fish or not a fish?
Fish.
Correct. A Percy Rojas. Fish or not a fish?
Not a fish.
Played for Peru 49 times in the 70s. A Cooley Loach. Fish or not a fish?
Fish.
Correct. A Domo Genesis, fish or not a fish?
Not a fish.
No, it's a rapper from LA, currently signed to Columbia Records. An Escalar, fish or not a fish?
Not a fish.
Is a fish.
Oh.
Your first incorrect answer. A Guar, fish or not a fish?
Not a fish.
No, it's an American heavy metal band. What about an Akinori Nishizawa, fish or not a
That's
fish?
That's got to be a fish.
Yeah, played 29 times for Japan. a Tommy Ruff, fish or not a fish?
Not a fish.
It is a fish. A hair lip sucker, fish or not a fish?
Fish.
Finally, a Manipur, fish or not a fish?
Not a fish.
It is one of the 37 states or union territories of India. Yeah. Which is where you're going, so that's good, isn't it?
Does this happen every week?
Not always, but can do if you want it to.
I mean, I'm new here, so I don't really want to dictate the, you know.
Did you like the game?
It was all right.
Okay. Jonathan, thanks so much for coming.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Will you come again?
If I'm asked to, yeah.
Yeah, you will be, certainly. Yeah. Barney, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Barry, have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you very much.
You may be missed.
I doubt it. I'm sure you'll soldier on.
What pod are you back? What's the pod you come back to?
The first one after Christmas, I think.
Oh, marvellous. Well, we'll see you then. Thanks all for listening. We'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.